Carl David is a third-generation fine arts dealer, but his real passion is writing and reaching out to people. And today we're going to talk about a different topic. This is something that doesn't come up quite as often, but definitely hits home just as much with me as any other thing, whether it's financial or fitness or health or anything like that. And so today we're actually going to be talking about depression and suicide. And this was something that was so important for me to include in this summit, in the Life Rescripted Summit, because this was probably the first time that I actually rescripted my life, if you will. And so actually I wore this shirt on purpose. You can see it here. It says, "Change, I am the definition," because I truly believe that my experience and my change and my transformation is the definition of change. And Carl, thank you so much for being here today and spending some time with us.
My pleasure. I'm glad to be able to reach out, you know, in another manner. So this is great for me. I seriously appreciate it.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, like I said, this is a topic that not everyone talks about. So, you know, this is just a little precaution to everyone listening. If you hear anything in what we're saying and you think, oh my gosh, this sounds like me, or, you know, I want some help with this, don't hesitate to reach out to either of us. First of all, we're definitely going to be leaving our contact information at the end of this video, but definitely reach out to someone for help. So Carl, you wrote a book called Baderfield, How My Family Survived Suicide, and it began as a memoir and an homage to your father, but you say that it became much more than that and a pretty important work. Could you maybe elaborate on what occurred in your life and originally pushed you to write this book?
Sure. When I was 16, I lost a brother to suicide. He was 22, and we had an all-American family that was just very close-knit, and this thing came out of left field. We didn't see it coming. There was no indication, no sign, nothing. So it took years to work our way through this and come out of the abyss of darkness that we were thrown into. And it took a lot of professional help. I mean, suicide is something that you can't deal with on your own. It's just too big. People die every day. It's a fact of life. But when something like this comes along and it's unexpected and it's not the normal kind of death, it really throws you for a loop. And, you know, we, as I said, we didn't see it. We had no indication, no note, nothing. So years later, I decided I needed to write a book about my family, which, as you indicated, was homage to my dad originally. But as it expanded over the decades, and it took a long time to write it because it was tough to go back and dig into it and feel the emotions that I really didn't want to feel again. But I knew if I had to have this thing do justice, that I needed to do that. So, and I should backtrack a little bit. My dad only lived 8 years after my brother took his life. So I lost two real close people in my life, and I needed to make this public. And through the years of writing this book, my wife would say to me, if it's too difficult, don't do it. You know, it's painful. And I said, no, I have to. Once I start something like this, I've got to finish it. I want the memoir out there for my dad and my brother. So as the years went on, I realized that the book had a much greater impact. The purpose was not just memorializing my family, but it was reaching out to raise awareness to the issue of suicide, suicide prevention, and suicide survival, and how our family actually muddled our way through it over a period of years. And it's something you don't get over. You only learn to live with it as best you can. So this was in my craw. It was my passion, my path to write this book and to get it out there so that I might reach one person and make them realize that when they die, they don't die alone. They take their family and their friends with them.
Absolutely. And this is... it's such a hard topic to get into, to be completely honest with you. And I'll just share briefly, when I was about 13, I was in the eighth grade in middle school, and I went away for Thanksgiving, and I came back, and I found out that someone in our school had committed suicide. And this was someone where I had witnessed that he was being bullied. I had witnessed that, you know, he didn't really have any friends. And so this was something that actually took its toll on me and ultimately pushed me into a downward spiral myself, where I was experiencing these things. But one thing that I'm learning, or just kind of finding out as we go, is that a lot of people find a lot of relief in writing about it. And this has been interesting, whether or not you yourself experienced suicidal thoughts or depression, but if you or a family member also experienced as well. And it's just such a I feel like, A, it's a great way to honor their memory, first off, because obviously if you could prevent it, you would do anything that you can. But at the same time, we also have to learn to accept that it is a part of life right now, and work more towards changing and altering these states of mind that get people to that tipping point. Tell me a little bit about just your brother's emotional state and whether or not, your family had any idea this was even coming about. I mean, so many people are quiet about it and they don't speak up, and so it comes as a shock to everyone.
Well, I think that's part of the problem. People hold their demons inside, and my brother seemed to be a very happy guy. Go and do and had friends and girlfriends and everything seemed to be okay. I mean, college was not really his thing. He went to night school. He was incredibly facile with his hands and could build a car, take something apart, put it back together again, which always made me stand in awe. I mean, it was incredible to watch this. And my dad was going to actually set up a frame shop for him on the top floor of the gallery so that he'd have his own business with a skill that he was quite good at. But the other obstacle that was in the way, maybe, and we had no idea, was the army unit that he was in was about to be shipped off to Vietnam. And we don't know whether that was a real factor or a major factor or something that was just in the back of his mind, or whether something else was going on in his head that we had no clue about, because he seemed to be fine. He was super sensitive, in general. A real sweetheart. I mean, a great guy. He was my best friend. And I had no indication. It was nothing, So this is something that you have this question mark that lives with you the rest of your life. But then again, at the same time, does it really matter? You can't bring them back. Now, had we seen something and, as foresight ahead of time, we would have intervened. But whatever was going on in his mind, nobody knew.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, and I know that this is a small what if scenario, but for others to learn about this, what do you think? So assuming that we don't know someone is going through this, right? What do you think is the one thing that we could change in our lives that we could transform about ourselves so that if someone is going through this, we could actually make an impact on them and their life? Is it, being more selfless or being more grateful or expressing outwardly how much more thankful we are about things? Because the problem is that we can't see this coming in many cases. So I just wonder if there's a change that we as human beings can make in ourselves that would allow us to at least try to prevent more of this from happening.
Well, I think in general, and I follow this rule my whole life, I think that we really have to reach out to people. We have to be kind. Smile at somebody on the street. It doesn't cost anything, but you might change that person's life who had been thinking, like, nobody loves me, I'm alone, I have no reason to get up in the morning. And somebody just smiled at me and turned it around, made me feel good. So, I think that's important. I think we need to really reach out. I think we need to be aware. I think we need to be far less judgmental of others, whether they look different than we do, or they act differently, or there's something, even something repugnant about them. You've got to sit back and say, there may be something going on in that person's life that I don't know about, and it may go deeper than I suspect. And, it doesn't cost anything to be kind and to be nice. It does, however, to be nasty and miserable to somebody, because you might change their life and push them off a bridge. I mean, not literally, but figuratively. And there's no reason to do that. I think if the world were a nicer place and people dropped their hatred and they dropped their prejudices and just became, hey, we're all in this together, what can I do to help you? The world would be a great place. It'd be much better than it is now.
Yeah, there's this great quote, and I know I'm going to butcher it, but it's something along the lines of, be kind to everyone for you don't know the struggle or the battle that they're going through. Or something like, everyone has a struggle or a battle that they're going through. And I think it's very true. And so many of us think that we try to compare. We try to look at other people's lives and say, oh, well, their life is better than mine because they have this car or this house or this, family. And we've kind of created this world where people have to always constantly one up each other. How many times have you been in conversation with someone and they say, Oh yeah, I just bought, a new car last week, and then all of a sudden that one person has to jump in and say, "Oh yeah, I got a new car 2 or 3 months ago," and has to start talking about it. And it we've created this culture of almost competition, and the truth is we're not in the Stone Age anymore. We don't have to compete to, go find our meat for dinner anymore. So perhaps psychologically that's been kind of ingrained in our minds since way back when, but it's something that I think it's probably time for a change, isn't it?
It's definitely time for a change. In fact, I had an experience like that over the weekend. I was leaving Whole Foods and I ran into an old client of mine, and he proceeded to tell me that he bought a bigger boat and just bought another house and this and that. You know, it's going on and on and on. I'm thinking to myself, my God, you obnoxious. You know, who cares? But then I started to think, you know what? There's really something missing in his life that he has to compensate with all these, bigger, better toys. When is enough enough? And what's missing? And I started to feel sorry for him, because I realized, instead of saying, something like, "You're obnoxious," I realized there's something really was missing in his life, that that he was missing the core existence of maybe love, closeness, family. I don't know what, but it was readily apparent. And instead of being judgmental, I was just like, I felt sorry for him.
Do you think that maybe perhaps there's something that's missing in our lives when we start to go through and feel the feelings of anxiety or depression? Because I know that me personally, I felt a lot of hopelessness and almost as if I was purposeless. And I think that I'm sure there are plenty of other people out there who are also feeling the same things and would probably say the same, is that they are depressed or they are anxious or they do have a panic disorder because they're missing a certain thing from their life. Would you say the same, that there's probably something missing and that's what's causing a lot of that?
Oh, definitely. I think that, if there's a family breakdown, if people feel like they're not loved, and maybe they're not because the people that are supposed to be there for them aren't, things like that can definitely cause anxiety. If people feel like they've lost their way, they're hopeless, they don't know what their purpose is. There was a great expression that my wife had told me she had read, and if you're living in the past, you're depressed. If you're living in the future, you're anxious. If you're living in the present, you're happy and calm. So I think that really resonates quite loudly. And I do think that people have things, if they're not missing, if they perceive they're missing, even if they're there, because sometimes they block these things out when they really are there. Someone might feel isolated from their family when in reality they've just put up a wall themselves. There are all kinds of emotional factors, but I think what everybody has to remember is every day you get up is a gift. You get a chance to redo your life, to re-script it, if you will, every day. And it's up to us to do the best that we can and make life not just calm and happy, but to be productive, to leave our mark so that we did something to make this a better place.
What you just said actually reminds me of something that I've learned. So I joined the rowing club here locally last spring. I've been rowing with them for 2 years now. Super excited because I have a competition, my first race coming up in a week and a half. But
Thanks.
rowing relates a lot to life, and a lot of people don't realize it. But as you are pulling a stroke, so you're in the boat and you're pulling a stroke, you are balancing the boat out, right? And at any point in time, if you raise or lower your hand about an inch, you could actually tip the boat over, especially in these racing boats because they're very thin. And, life is kind of like this balance, And the best part about pulling a stroke in rowing is that you get another one, and you get another one, and you get another one. And if you have one bad stroke and the boat isn't balanced, is assuming you haven't fallen into the water or flipped the boat over, you actually do get the chance to pull again and rebalance it back out. And I think that this really does relate to life in that, every day we get to hit that reset button. And even in rowing, when you flip the boat, you can still flip it back over and get right back in. You're not done. You just might be a little bit slower than the rest of the people in the race.
Good point. That's a great analogy, because it really is very much like life. We make our own decisions, our own choices, good, bad, or indifferent. But we, if we're lucky, we get the chance to redo it and make up for it or correct it. And I think that's what life is all about.
And I think that when we, as you say, pay it forward, that's when we ourselves really start to find a lot of gratitude and happiness in our own lives because, not only are we impacting someone else's life, but I think there are definitely some psychological and chemical changes in our own minds that benefit us too. And so when you say pay it forward, tell me a little bit about how you are paying it forward and perhaps, some examples of how other people could pay it forward too.
Initially, I wrote this book for my family. I've written three books. The first book was Collecting in Care of Fine Art, which Crown published for me in 1981, because we're in the art business. I needed to level the playing field and let investors, people, collectors know how the art market really works and why, because everything in the news rags is all it's all hype for sensationalism. And that was one of my ways initially of paying it forward, by taking my knowledge, my expertise, and sharing it. And I got a lot of flack from colleagues, but that was fine with me. That shows me that I did the right job. The next book, Bader Field, How My Family Survived Suicide, I wrote, and it developed into a thing where I'm using as a tool to reach out to raise awareness to suicide, so that maybe I help somebody who's been through it, maybe I keep somebody from doing it. So I'm paying it forward by taking my darkest days and turning them into something that will benefit others. And I've done hundreds of journal, television, radio interviews over the last however many years since the book came out at the end of 08. And my newest book, Waking Dreams, A Subtle Reality, is also another way for me to pay it forward. It's Motivational Press is publishing this for me, and it's a compilation of episodes of synchronicity, messages and signs that I've had over the years from the universe, because the universe is like a big parabolic mirror. Whatever you put out there, you're going to get back. It's karma. The universe has its own rules. You can't break them. If you do, you'll pay until you get it right. But they're all good rules, and it's just like what you said, it's paying it forward. Doing something good comes back to you. And I do things good all the time. I don't expect it to come back to me. I don't do it for an expectation that something's going to be rewarded for what I did. That's wrong. I mean, that's not what it's all about. Paying it forward is reaching out, helping other people.
And I think that you're doing extremely well at helping others. And a book is just one great example of how you can help people. The podcast that I started, is something else that I did to try and help people. And I think that a lot of people don't realize that it only takes a little bit. If I stop my car on the street when I'm driving through the city and a homeless person asks me for a dollar, that dollar can actually get you a cheeseburger at McDonald's, a coffee at the gas station, whatever it is. That dollar goes a long way, and I think people forget that. They stopped remembering that one small action, kind of like the butterfly effect, has a domino effect. It really they say that when a butterfly flaps its wings, a tsunami could be created halfway around the world. And I think that it's very true, and I've been reading a little bit more about the law of attraction and how, at the end of the day, we just have neurons firing off in our brain. It's just energy, and I think that the energy we put out into the world is the energy that we're going to get. So I was hearing a lot more about how if you go out there and say, "Oh, well, I need a lot of money," you're putting this negative energy out there of this need for something instead of saying, "Well, I'm going to attract wealth or success through helping other people." And you'd be surprised that the world does actually open up and give that to you.
Oh, it does. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Whether you attract positive or negative depends on what you put out there and how you phrase it. And I think that, our brains are wired to create visually and whatever else the reality that we have.
Yeah, and speaking of phrasing it, you have a message that you are giving out into the world. It comes out in your books, it comes out in speaking to you. If you had to break it down, and let's just say, you're on an elevator ride with me for all of 20 seconds, and you had to tell me your message on the spot, and you wanted to make a difference in my life, and you knew nothing about me, what would you say? Let's just say that you had the guts to turn to me and say something. So we're gonna assume that, it's not awkward that there's just two people in an elevator. But what would you turn to me and say that you think could, alter the rest of my life, having not known anything about me?
I would probably say to you, live every moment of your life to the fullest. Don't quit. Don't let anything negative stop you from reaching your goals. Just visualize what you want, go for it, but be kind to everybody on the way, on your journey.
And wow. I'm not really sure what to say to that because I know that that would definitely, I feel like that would make a change in anyone's life. You know, I would probably come home from work that day and say, hey, you know, so and so, this guy in the elevator just turned to me and said this crazy thing. And I don't really know 100% what it means yet, but I know that I'll remember it. And it kind of goes with that saying of, you know, people don't necessarily remember what you said, but they remember how you made them feel. And I think that if you could, you know, make people really feel that they have a meaning and purpose in the world, then you know, your mission here is accomplished.
I agree. I think that's really important. People really need to be cognizant of the fact that other people are suffering, and that, you know, and we all evolve at different rates, you know, physically, mentally, emotionally, and metaphysically. And you know, it's not a race. I mean, we're all here on our own path for our own reasons, and sometimes we don't know what they are, but sometimes along the way we find out what they are. And I think you know, I've found my reason. And I'm here to take some experiences that I've had and help other people to get through their experiences and let them know that, you know, we do survive, we go on, you know. And that's the one thing about suicide. People need to know that we do survive. You know, it takes a lot of help and a lot of time. It's a tremendous obstacle, but with proper help, you get through it.
Yeah.
You can't quit. You can't fold. You got to feel your dark moments and go through it. But then you have to realize, hey, you know what? Life is here to be lived. We'll carry the spirit of that person with us forever, which we do. I don't think you can kill spirit. Spirit lives on forever. I think, you know, where we are in this dimension on this planet is a learning ground. And we don't get it right, we come back as many times as it takes.
And do you think that when you carry that with you, you know, I think that I was making a mistake when I was at least growing up or a little bit younger, you know, maybe in my college age, you know, about 5, 6 years ago, I would tell people that I was diagnosed with bipolar manic depression. And now a lot of the times I tend to say I was labeled with bipolar manic depression, because I almost feel like when you say diagnosed, you're almost accepting that as your fate. Do you feel like you carry this burden with you for the rest of your life, or are you able to move past what has happened and truly, you know, just be grateful for who he was and the things that he did as a person when he was alive?
Well, I think it's a combination of both. You carry the burden with you because it becomes emblematic of who you are. It's an experience that becomes indelled in your brain, in your very being, in your psyche. But at the same time, you do go on, and you remember the good times that you had, and you carry that with you. Those memories are life-saving. You cherish them. I do that with the memories of my dad. He was only 58 when he died, and I felt like I was really robbed. But you know, I have these precious memories, and that's a gift. And it doesn't matter whether somebody lives 20 years, 30 years, or 100 years, it's the quality of the years that you get. I mean, I'm not saying that somebody lives 20 and passes away. That's horrible. That's really tragic. However, you've got to take the good times with you because those are the ones that count. Those are the ones that get you through the bad times. You know, when there's an anniversary of my brother's death or my father's death or their birthdays, the birthdays are something to celebrate, but the other days are tough to get through, you know. And for years, I pushed them away. I didn't want to acknowledge them. And my wife said to me, when are you going to acknowledge this? And I said, I don't want to. It's too painful. But really, you have to, because the emotional body runs the physical body. And if you try and shove your emotions away, they're going to come back with a vengeance, and they're going to punish you one way or another until you see what the message is and feel the emotions and let them out. You let them out, it happens constantly. It's like a cleansing, if you will. So these are things, yeah, you carry them with you, but at the same time, you do move on and you live your life and you take them with you.
And there's a huge tie there between emotionally and physically what happens. You know, I know that a lot of people going through panic or anxiety have issues, especially with their stomach or intestinal system. So this is not something that's healthy to hold on to by any means. It does actually wreak havoc on the rest of your body, whether you realize it or not. Sometimes it's as small as certain skin conditions. I've been learning now, a lot of skin conditions are related to the gut and what's going on in your stomach and the bacteria in there. And so I think that we've got to be much more careful and much more cognizant of, what's going on in our minds and what we're trying to push down and push away. And the sooner we deal with those things that we're trying to hide away from, the better off, we'll be able to rise and grow out of that and to move on. And along the lines of moving on, I don't think that we're forgetting them by any means. We're actually honoring them by moving on because you know that they would want us to, enjoy and fulfill the rest of our life's dreams.
Exactly. I mean, the one thing that if someone takes their life, not realizing the impact they leave behind, the wake of horror, if they'd realized that, I think if they were in a right frame of mind, they would never do it. And in the case of my brother, I think if he realized, what was left behind, he wouldn't have done it. But obviously, someone who takes their life is not quite in their right state of mind
Right.
emotionally. It's just, whether it's depression, whether it's a drug issue, whether no matter what it is that influences the brain at that point, you as I said, you can't be judgmental of somebody who does that. They don't know. They can't see past their own horror, their own blackness, whatever they're suffering, the demons. But I think you're right. I mean, I think that you have to live your life. We're all here to do that. And anyone who has passed would say, "Hey, live your life. This was my story, not yours. I'm sorry it impacted you. I would never have done that." That kind of thing. But you got to go live your life. And I always carry my brother and my father's spirit with me. I know they're not far, away.
Yeah, and you shared with us, your message of what you would want to tell someone if, you met them in an elevator and you knew nothing about them. I'm curious, would your message change if you met someone and they admitted to you that they were going through something? Because I feel like it's very easy for us to just say, this is your one life to live and this is all you've got. But I think that our message probably changes just a little bit, when we're approaching somebody who's going through, these dark thoughts and emotions. So I'm curious, same question again, but, what if you jumped into an elevator and someone says, you say, "How's your day going?" And they turn to you and say, "You know what? My day's awful." And they just spit it all out and tell you what's happening. How would you react in that situation?
I would be sympathetic, and I would say I understand because we've all had days like that. But don't give up, don't quit. There's an opportunity here where you can possibly turn it around. Tomorrow will be better. My grandfather used to say to all of us, "As bad as today is, tomorrow will be better." And you know what? He was right because everything changes. If something great, it may not be great tomorrow. If something's horrible today, it'll get better tomorrow or the day after. But we have to allow ourselves and allow other people to go through these things and to help them by just being there with them to kind of hold their hand, if you will, emotionally or even physically. And just, you put your arm around somebody and say, "Hey, you know what? I get it. I've been there. I feel your pain. But things, give it a little time. Things will get better. You're not alone. We're all in this together in this world." And that's one of my messages for people who are contemplating taking their life, to let them know that they're not alone, they're loved, and there's help out there for them today. This isn't the 1960s anymore. Psychiatry and psychological help is an adjunct to being healthy. It's not, "Oh, he's sick, he's going to a doctor." Yeah, well, going to the doctor, sure, you want to get better. It's healthy to want to go seek out help. So I would just say, be kind again, be understanding. Don't be judgmental and say, "You're crazy. My day's worse than yours." Because that's garbage. I mean, you want to sympathize with somebody and empathize with them and kind of help them through it.
Yeah, and you've shared two really great ways to approach both life and the people that where we don't know what they're going through, and the people who might actually open up and share with us what they are going through. And I think that they're two really great approaches to, making your difference in the world. And you've written this book, and I'd love to share with everybody where people can find it, how they can find you and get in touch with you, and maybe just perhaps share the types of people that you think would be a great fit for reading and checking out this book.
Sure. If you do a search for Baderfield by Carl David or Baderfield, How My Family Survived Suicide, it'll come up in a million places. It's on Amazon. It's on my website. I think it's still available to be, purchased through there. It's my website is www.carledavid, that's carledavid.com. And my email address is carledavid, again, carledavid. DAVID@gmail.com. And I'm always available if anybody's out there and they're struggling or they need help or they need a question or they have an experience they want to share, feel free. Our gallery number is 215-735-2922. And it rings to my cell, so I'm always available. I have become a suicide prevention advocate over the last however many years, and it's a real passion for me. And in my next book, Waking Dreams, The Subtle Reality, is available also on Amazon. And these books are also ebooks, so you don't have to go buy a hard copy or a soft copy for, you know, $20 or $17, whatever it is. I think for like $7.99 or $9.99, or depending on where you look, the books are available in the Apple iBook store. They're available on the Nook, Kindle, all the rest of the online, you know, reading stores. I can't remember all of them, Kobo, but there are about 60 of them worldwide, where at least where Bader Field can be found. And my message is, if you're listening and you need help, don't keep this to yourself. Talk to somebody in your family. If they won't listen, call 911 if you're on that edge of a crisis. Talk to a bartender, go to a hospital, talk to a stranger on the street, talk to somebody, because somebody will listen. I mean, this is a different world today than we lived in all those years ago. And, you know, and if you know somebody that you're seeing who's experiencing this kind of thing, where they're giving away their possessions, they're becoming reclusive, they're dropping out, they're not interested in anything anymore, and you see they're, or they're talking about taking their life, reach out to them. And if they won't get the help, get the help for them. The worst you can do is embarrass them a little bit if they weren't serious. But when someone says, I'm going to kill myself, you know what? Take it seriously, because they might really mean it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the best way to round this all up. And, you know, thank you so much for sharing a little bit of your story. And obviously, I would love for everybody listening, if you're interested in reading more, to look up Bader Field, How My Family Survived Suicide, whether it's on Amazon or any of the other bookstores. And, you know, like Carl was saying, it's available for Kindle and in the ebook format. So, you know, don't think that you have to go spending a ton of money on it. This is something that, you know, he wants to share his message with the world, and he wants to make a difference in the world. And I'm just really excited, and I hope that at least one person today walks away with you know, a change, or at least wanting to make a change in their world. And Carl, it's been great having you here on this interview, and I would love to, you know, kind of catch up with you again and see how things go when your next book, Waking Dreams, comes out.
Thank you, Zephan. I really appreciate it. And this is such an important topic, you know, and this is my life rescripted, if you will, because I've taken this path to reach out farther and farther. The art business is still my living, and I love it, and I'm passionate about it, but this is something that I feel like I really need to do, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to have been here with you guys today, and I'm always available.
That's great, and thank you so much for, you know, being willing to share your personal contact information, because I know that, you know, that's just shows, it's testament to who you are and how much of a difference that you want to make in the world.
No, thanks. I appreciate it. You know, one thing before we go real quickly, I have two goals for this book. One is to get it in every school system in America, because I think if this were mandatory reading, kids who are contemplating it and not really paying attention to what this act does to their families might wake up and say, oh my God, I can't do that. You know, is it a selfish act? Yeah, it is, but not in the sense that something's selfish where you're, you know, look, I have to have this, I got to do this. It's because people are in a very mired emotional state, and, you know, it's understandable. It's selfless, if you will. But the other thing I'm trying to do is have a film made, because I think in today's world, as a visual rendition of this book, a version of it, an adaptation, it would make a huge positive impact. You know, it's not a depressing book. There are a couple chapters in there that are pretty tough, but overall, on balance, it's an inspirational book. And I just wanted to get that message out there, so that it doesn't frighten anybody, you know, from reading it. It's an inspirational book. I mean, it's a very positive, forceful work of art.
And I think that's really great that you've been able to combine, you know, your work, your art, with your passion, which is sharing this message. And I would encourage everyone to find out how to do that. You know, I learned that video was my best work, but my passion was the storytelling. And that's kind of where I ended up here, you know, in interviews and sharing people's stories.
Well, I think it's great, and I thank you for that. I really do. Don't quit. Keep going. You're on a fabulous path.
Thank you very much for being here, and we will definitely be catching up with you soon.
Sounds good. Thank you.